Good morning and welcome to Saturday Morning Serial. My name is Kira DeCudre and I'm coming to you live from Accra. Tamara, what were we just listening to?
Well, before all this got started, that was the Week in Radio. We heard from Marcus Roberts, Sonny Rollins. That last band was, what were they called? They were on the Magic Stranger show on Thursday night, psychedelic band there. And then I don't know what's going on now. What's going on now here?
Well, we've got a studio full of people this morning. It's my pleasure to have Adam Zaretsky in live this morning and his assistant G. Say hello.
Hello. Good to see you, Kira.
Good to see you as well. Now, I met Adam at the Deep Listening Conference up at RPI a couple weeks ago, and he was showing things on, transgenic humans and plants and a lot of really interesting things, and that's why I brought him in today. So tell me what you've been working on.
Well, recently I got back from the Netherlands where I was playing music to bipolar flowers. You can hear some of this music in the background. The flowers have been not only genetically modified, but whole genome reprogrammed. I refer to this as whole genome fracking. In a lot of ways, the plants have been kicked. Their entire genome, their epigenetic landscape, has been thrown out of the valley and is now in a state of bipolar flux. And these plants have been played this fabulous music you hear in the background in order to help find out what it feels like to be a plant that's been psychoticized and then overexposed to extremely noisy analog synthesizer.
Wow. So what do you find with these bipolar plants?
Well, the biggest thing that I've found out so far is that they produce a little bit of extra folic acid, and their leaves are completely weirdly curled, and they stand up sort of like they have sort of some kind of strange hairdo. I don't know. Morphologically, they're different. They were designed to help with experiments in solar... solar amplitude. Like the consortium I was working for, I'm working for in the Netherlands, Biopolar Cells, is actually trying to increase photosynthesis through genetic engineering. But you can hear now...
I don't know. But are they a little less hairy too?
Maybe. Are they? But you can probably see it better with their.
I think they're almost glabrous, like hairless. They're making little Paris Hilton.
So, when I say they're almost glabrous, that means they're somewhat hairless. I mean, for plants, they're kind of interesting. I'm interested also because I sort of designed these to be obscure, like quacky, like actually psychotic. But I like bipolar people. They're actually more in tune sometimes. They're a little more sensitive. They're a little more horrified by the world and also a little more engaged. Yes.
They can also be psychic and what's that word when you can... clairvoyant.
Yeah, I really do believe that. So by trying to make bipolar plants as a model through genetic engineering and whole genome reprogramming, using like all sorts of zinc fingers that are competing for places in the genome to upregulate and downregulate, I think that I've made a model of bipolarity. And in some ways, I just want to entertain them.
The plants.
The plants themselves, yeah. Yeah, as beings, as being persons, or some type of neo-person. Strangely, I've been doing some research, and they just found out that plants can hear the sound of caterpillars chewing on their leaves, even if the caterpillars aren't chewing on their leaves. They actually play the sound of leaves being chewed by caterpillars to some plants, and when they actually introduce the caterpillars to those plants freak out more than plants that haven't heard the sound of chewing.
Now, freak out, what do you mean by freak out? How can you tell?
Well, they're mustard plants, so they release sort of like their own sort of mustard gas or mustard oil. They release more of it. They release it in response, like an emergency response, but their emergency response is cued to by sound itself. So
this is where we get the term skunk weed?
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And what they're thinking, of course, scientists are always into utility, so they're thinking, wow, we can place sounds of pests to plants as a pesticide. What I'm thinking is it actually shows, if I'm not mistaken, it shows that plants can feel body horror from sound itself, which means they're listening, and they're capable of emotion like panic.
Plants have feelings too?
I'd like to tell a true zucchini story.
Once upon a time.
I'll make it short and sweet. I come home with the intention of watering my garden, and I don't think much of it. I go inside, I come out to water my garden. All the zucchini leaves is lifted up, ready to receive that water. Now, those of you who don't garden, you don't know what I was talking about, but those of you who do, when the zucchini and the squash plants and the pumpkins, when they know they is going to be watered, their leaves cup to capture as much water as possible. I repeat, I come home with the intention of watering the garden, park the car, go inside the house, come outside to get the hose. The zucchini is already cupped and waiting. This really happened.
A true story from Tom Skirmis.
Thank you very much.
So I have a little problem. I want to ask your advice, even your audience's advice. I recently got a residency because I do a lot of art and biology, and I'm really interested in actual art and biology, not art about biology, but art that utilizes the protocols of biology to make living sculptures, you know, like genetically modified organisms or even physically deformed embryos, things like that.
A question?
Yeah.
Can these plants that you produce, can they reproduce?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
They're not allowed outside of the lab. We've tried to get clearance even for exhibition, and they're not really allowed out because
they can in Nevada, right?
Hmm?
In Nevada, they're allowed out of the lab.
Are they? Yeah, that's possible. Maybe down at Los Alamos. I'm very gullible, but I'm also game. I'm going to try to get them sent from the Netherlands to a lab here so I can further my sonic entertainment of them.
Just don't let them loose on the rest of nature, would you?
Well, you know, it's a real question between preserving the environment from what possibly could be technological pollution and feeling for the genetically modified organisms of the world. They're kind of in jail, you know, except for the 60% of our crops that are out in the open air. But I mean,
yeah, but them trees out there can't move. They's rooted and stuck right where they is. They ain't going nowhere either.
Oh, I don't know. Pollen moves far and wide. Flowers and bees.
Yeah,
you
but
know
the
what
trees
I mean.
Themselves
it's transmission.
Is imprisoned right in that dirt right there. They ain't going nowhere.
I don't know. They're even finding out that they not only, well, I mean, plants do move. They just move a little slower. And actually, they're hunters. I think plants are carnivores. They like to eat, they're kind of scavengers. They like to eat blood, they like to eat bone, and they like to eat shit, right? And actually,
we're not in safe harbor right now, fella.
Oh, well, here's what I would say. When I meant...
compost.
Compost, yes. When I was an organic farmer for a while, and I actually would feed blood meal and fish meal and bone meal to my plants because that's what they like. What they are is they're the most patient hunters in the forest. There's plenty of people running around here trying to shoot some deer, but what they do is they just wait for organisms to die near them, right? It's actually a fabulous way of hunting because statistically speaking, something's going to die near you regularly.
Now, I've got a question. We've talked before about, you know, transgenic humans and combining the genes of, like, you know, an animal and a human. Could you combine the genes of, let's say, a human and a plant? Could you, like, make a tree with legs?
A planimal, right? Face? Well, actually,
I was thinking of getting, like, tamako, so human and tobacco.
Oh, wow. Wow. That sounds like someone to chew on. I actually have worked quite a lot with the idea of trying to make solar-powered humans. When I was in the Institute of Biology in Leiden in the Netherlands, they brought me in to try to increase photosynthesis, and I was thinking, well, why don't we cut out the middleman? I mean, we're sort of, people like to think they're at the top of the food chain, but we're actually at the bottom of the food chain. The top of the food chain is the sun, and the bottom is like eating the things that eat the things that live off the sun. So, instead of bacon, why not just turn ourselves into sort of large bat-like hammocks and just lay out and photosynthesize?
Sort of
large bat-like hammocks and just lay out and photosynthesize.
Sort of
now, it's, I think, important to try to micro-inject algae, genetically modified algae, into transparent organisms that are modified to not have not only any pigment like albinos, but also any iridescence, so they have zero color. Glass humans with algae around their periphery would actually not need to eat, probably not need to work, not need central heating, no heating bills, right? Forget Central Hudson. Forget going to the supermarket. Just sun yourself.
Wait a second. Glass humans without the algae, can you see their insides? Like, could you, like, see through a person?
Oh, actually, I can.
You're
sort
so
of,
transparent.
Yeah. Wait, you need some...
Where's that tremor?
I think it's important that we elicit play in non-humans and reduce their stress. So one of the things we should look into is how do we reduce the stress of genetically modified organisms? Can we elicit sexual exuberance in them or enrich their consciousness? What about group dynamics?
Oh, man. Wait, group dynamics? Are you saying among transgenic humans?
Well, yeah. I just started working for this biotech company that's here in the Hudson Valley. It's kind of low to the ground. It's called NADL Incorporated. N-A-D-L. Sometimes they go by NADLink. And they gave me a residency so I can go into the lab. And what we're doing is we're designing human gene and non-human gene vectors for the human genome.
Like what?
Well, actually, the tableau is wide open. In other words, we can use genes
what?
From any
what?
Organism, any life form on the planet. It could be fungal. It could be from any of the five kingdoms. You know, there's phyla to choose from. So, of course, like the military wants soldiers with eagle eyes, right? They make better sharpshooters. But I'm thinking more like... maybe sort of like a, oh, I don't know. Sometimes I get into Salvador Dali. I get a little catatonic, and I want an anti-aesthetic human. So I'm just thinking people covered in ears everywhere, like freckles or moles, you know?
So like a person's face could be covered in ears?
Yeah, like all over, little tiny ears. And maybe they'd scratch and they'd fall off, you know?
Excuse me just one moment. I want to get something straight.
What? We got to say it's 90.7 WAACA.
Tomaro, you tell me that there's people who think I'm crazy. Did you not? I just want to get this straight. They actually said that and they believe it.
That was a joke I told once.
Oh, I'm joking. Oh, I feel like I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But yes, we have crazier guests than you every week, or sometimes.
Now wait a second. I'm not done with
you. Just called me crazy again, Tom.
I called him crazy.
We're all crazy, Tom. It's okay. Don't feel alone. Now wait a second. Back up. So this opens a whole spectrum of possibilities, right? Could we make humans with lizard skin or with eyes in the back of our heads?
Absolutely. One of the problems is most humans are already pre-morphed. They're sort of preset. So the target is actually human embryonic stem cells and human, you know, pre-born humans, embryos, fetuses, etc. And we're working with embryonic stem cells in culture, and we're designing these vectors, and then we have to sort of tag them and sort them to make sure that we got what we wanted where. But surely, yes, we're working with centipede DNA. We're working with some cat balls from the SPCA, cat testicles. And we're working with a variety. I even brought some tunicates here. I have some tunicates here in this vial you can see here.
Don't break it.
Yeah.
Don't break it open.
I won't crack it open.
Don't spill it.
I know they look a little weird. They're our nearest non-vertebrate neighbors. They're notochords. They don't have spines, but they do have like a spinal cord. People had thought that Amphioxus were our nearest neighbors because they look like worms, they look like penises, they wiggle like sperm, they're very masculine. But what it turns out is that tunicates, which are more sedentary, kind of like barnacles and a little bit overweight, more closely represent our nearest human neighbor. So if any of you are over 30, go ahead and research tunicate, and you could be at home with your sort of ever-growing mass of sedentary barnacleness. I'm thinking of taking some of the genes from these tunicates and making a sort of foot stickiness so that people can actually sit at their desk all day, in fact, their whole life, and not really have to move. Maybe if we mix this photosynthesis with like an ability to not to be sort of glued down, well, we could have perfect workers. They wouldn't need food, you know, they wouldn't need heat, and they wouldn't really be able to get away. The only problem with that is that they also wouldn't have any reason to do anything because they would be self-satisfied, like bodily joy. It's an old-fashioned thing, maybe a little Wilhelm Reich, you know? Yeah,
is your guest's name God?
It is. This is Adam Zaretsky.
Hey, Adam.
We should tell everybody, yeah. And then we were listening to Saturday Morning Serial at WGXC 9%.
And, I'm just playing God. I mean, it's a...
Well, if it isn't God, then it's Dr. Frankenstein.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, parts is parts, you know?
Are you calling God Dr. Frankenstein?
Well, actually, you know, I do have some ethical leanings. They're slim. There's a lot of gray area. Okay, but I did find out that the corporation that I'm working with, NADLINK, is actually getting a lot of their stem cells from a fertility clinic, a psychic fertility clinic called Cyfert.
A psychic fertility clinic.
Now, yeah.
So how the insemination is extraterrestrial?
No, well, I mean, yes. I mean, there's some Anunnaki sperm out there on the web. But, down in Woodstock, there's a psychic fertility clinic called Cyfert. And there's these releases, and they wanted me to sign one of these, and I'm just not sure what to do, because the release actually, it releases myself as an explicit model for their documents. They claim to be Reichian and doing some kind of research, but really...
So you're saying there's hundreds of psychic grandchildren of yours throughout the Catskills?
Well, it's like this. People come in to get fertility treatments. They really want a baby, right? And I don't blame them, although the planet is horribly overpopulated. People are people, you know. And they're coming to get their eggs collected, like hyperovulated. They need these hormone treatments and a little laparoscope, a light operation, and you've got lots of eggs. Or they want to buy eggs, and then they want their husband's sperm to be micro-injected in, or they're a gay couple, and they want to have, like, some sort of baby on their own. What ends up happening is their genome gets read by a team of psychics, and I think that's kind of cool. And then suggestions are made. But what I've noticed is that any medical waste from this fertility clinic is going straight to the corporation I'm working for. I'm not sure if these people read the fine print.
It's very good compost.
It is good compost. I mean, and actually, it's a great face cream. There's nothing like human embryonic stem cells to, like, cure things.
The Anunnaki sperm available on the website, is that fiction or is that true?
Well, I think the first rule of talking to psychics is that they are incapable of wondering whether things are fiction or not, because it's bad for business. I mean, really. I had a couple of psychics. I'll tell you a story. I was working backstage at Woodstock 94, and a couple of psychics came up to me. This one guy from Hawaii, and he was smiling too much and a little too buff, and he gave me the chills, and he wanted free tickets. And I was like, okay, you guys are psychic. You should be able to get your free tickets without asking. But what I told him was, dude, you have to get out your dowsers. I don't know if you guys realize this, but down in Socrates, in that field, an artesian well had opened up under Aerosmith's trailer. Like, just bloomed. And I said, get your dowsers out. We got to follow the trail because there's telluric currents and they lead to Aerosmith's trailer. And it's possible that one of the band members of Aerosmith is the one.
Oh, since we're talking about being overpopulated, I'm not sure where you're getting that from, because we seem to be involved in massive depopulation all over the planet.
Well, I mean, I think I haven't really noticed that, although Ebola's on the rise. Maybe we'll be dating this in a couple of days.
Well, wait a minute. What about AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa?
Uh-huh.
Just in case that didn't get heard. What about AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa?
Well, actually, I am working on some potential AIDS research.
I thought they took out those researchers in that plane thing.
Yeah, that was actually kind of interesting that the Russians don't believe in AIDS, maybe, or they want it to continue, so they took out the guy who discovered AIDS. I thought that was a strange assassination, considering the circumstances. I've been working on a project to study the effects of something called mutafelch. And this is if you mix feces and blood and sperm into sort of a paste, and then you bombard them with nanoparticles of gold and spermidine soaked in, say, centipede DNA or tunicate DNA or cat testicle DNA, it is possible that this mutafelch, this mixture of blood, sperm, and feces, could study the interaction between the organisms, right? Between the blood cells, the sperm, and the organisms, the microbiome that lives inside of feces. And in so doing, we might be able to discover how AIDS might be carried between blood, sperm, and feces, which is kind of important.
Wow, so it sounds like a lot of your research in bioart is both, I don't know, would seem to please people, you know, like AIDS research, people would probably be for that. But do you find that other people are maybe, do you find into some of your other research, or find it, I don't know, a little creepy or a little off?
No, everyone seems to just love my work.
Bullshit! I'm nauseated and horrified by every blessed thing I've heard.
What are you talking about, everybody?
I'm nauseated and horrified by every blessed thing
I've
heard. That's French, by the way. B-O-U-C-H-A-I-T. Bullshit.
That's
French, by the way. B-O-U-C-H-A-I-T.
I think it's important to have, how do I say it? It's important to have free range. Our organisms that we're creating are often in a one-way street. They're kept inside and basically euthanized after they're researched on. And as we begin to make transgenic humans, we're going to have to think about them as entities. We're going to have to think about them as beings. And those beings, though mildly different from us, or perhaps part fungal, growing on Mars and edible, no doubt, shaped like Schwarzenegger, yet hairless, sporulating. I think we have to think of them as in need of enrichment as much as in need of enrichment as us. We're prisoners also of the social, basically the jails we put ourselves in. So I don't really think that we should demonize what we're afraid to look at. We're afraid of to see the reflections of ourselves in our transgenic kindred.
Would a transgenic human, like if you were just to make one and kind of send it out on the streets, you know, it goes down to McDonald's or whatever, what rights would a transgenic human have?
Would they be more or less than corporations?
That's a good question. There are people talking about transgenic aesthetics, transgenic ethics.
Is there going to be like a hierarchy, like cats are here and dogs are here and...
Actually, there's some super snotty transhumanists out there that want to do nothing but enhance humans, and their concept of enhancement is based on outdated and inhibitional philosophy, but all they want to do is make stuff bigger, better, more beautiful, more intelligent, taller, longer living, perhaps immortal, and able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
Mm-hmm. Superhumans.
Yeah. And their way of thinking is that regular humans are the ones that are inferior.
Oh, so this would be almost like creating like a superior race of sorts.
Yeah, I think it's a neo-eugenics. Yeah.
Yeah, what a novel idea.
Well, actually, in this way, they don't have to kill millions of people, you know, Jews and Roma people and Poles. Instead... they can just wait for the old version of humanity to die off.
It's springtime for Hitler.
Yeah. In other words, instead of a genocide, you can just make superhumans and they will outlive and outperform some of the...
Here's the question.
You know, regular, what do you call it? Generic humans.
Yeah, the generic humans. My question is this, and you can, I guess this is personally, why do people like you grant yourselves the right to do this?
That's a good question. I think for me, it's actually just pure eroticism. I mean, it's a kind of way of getting in, you know, like getting through that door. It's like courtship leads to babies, you know? Even the fertility clinic in Woodstock, that Cyford place, is offering tribe building. And tribe building is for $38 or $39 million, you can have 1,000 children that are all at least half yours. And they'll actually be raised all the way to 18.0. Now, these are standard humans just using, in vitro fertilization and new reproductive technologies. But for a little more, you can get those extras. Like pinstripes and things like that. And I think when you're adding those extras, whether it's a doctor or a technician or an artist or a scientist, that they are actually making love to the human genome. They're inserting new genes. That's actually the biological definition of sex, which is to get new genes into the germline, like down through heredity. So they're creating a waterfall of aesthetic perspectives, you know? It's an opening of the human genome to new ways of determination.
And we do want to repeat that special warning before. If you need to touch your radio, you do want to put on gloves first this morning if you're listening to the show. We're listening to Adam Zaretsky on Saturday Morning Serial.
Oh, okay. Well, let me just ask you this. Can you understand that there are people like me who would never grant themselves the right to do what you're doing? And to a certain extent, not all of it, I think manipulating the genome to do away with cancer, I don't have a problem with that. But manipulating the genome because you get off on it, I would never do such a thing personally, and I hate to tell you, I think it's wrong.
You've never manipulated your genome?
Just to get off on it?
No, I ain't.
Who among us?
There's a question. I mean,
if
we look at these experiments in sound with the plants,
I mean, I ain't.
The sound itself of caterpillars biting on the leaves, that awful sound. The sound itself of caterpillars biting on the leaves, that awful sound, changes the gene expression patterns of the caterpillars, right? So actually, what we're doing on the radio right now by vibrating the air through people's radios and wiggling the little post spirochetes that make up the inside of the ear that pick up all those sounds, we're changing people's chemistry.
I thought that was the butterfly effect and not the caterpillar effect.
So, I mean, we have to look closely at what is mutagenesis. Does sound cause genetic modification? In other words, if I do this... does that leave someone inalterably...
You got Tom!
Oh! So, but I wanted to talk to you because there are some times that I'm a little worried. And what I found out at Cypher is that there's these twin gynecologists, Stuart and Cyril Marcus, that are working there. And I'm not sure if they're ready for prime time. In other words, these two guys seem to be a little suicidal, a little manipulative. I think they're using their own sperm for all the fertility treatments. And in some ways, I'm not sure what their perspective is on gynecology in general. So they do worry me. I mean, I do get worried sometimes, especially when I found out that I had signed a release for my own parts as medical
Harvest time. Wish I was making it up. Look into it.
It has been a feces show, as you might, one might say.
Yeah, I really do feel nauseous. Could you stop it, Tama? Sorry.
Oh, wow.
I really do feel nauseous. Could you stop it, Tama?
I think it kind of dives into the, you know, what we read about in sci-fi books and movies and that sort of thing, and kind of brings it to reality and really makes you think about, whoa, what would the world be like if this was part of our society?
I've never met a real-life Dr. Frankenstein before.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think it's obvious to me that, you know, if you're against human genetic modification, that you suffer from sexual anxiety. Because, you know, it's obvious that our sexual zones correspond to excitation and intensity and even charge, possibly bion orgone charge, which leads me to believe that we have a life force and it's here to go and it wants to infiltrate in every direction, and that's how life survives. Like, fitness is not based on keeping things heirloom or being organic. Fitness is based on perversion.
Okay, fine. Get off on your petri dishes, you and people like you. Don't let it all loose on the rest of us.
Well, I wanted to know if I could measure the space between your eyes before the show is over. Do you mind? I brought a ruler.
No.
I'm wearing gloves.
You ain't touching me.
I don't need to touch you. I'm just going to see, like,
you know, I have a prediction that there's going to be some sort of biological accident in the studio in about 5 minutes.
Oh, well, here, I brought this gas mask if
all
you
right,
want to put that on.
We got to start putting stuff
what
on,
you,
yeah.
What are you going to do? You want to measure the space between... Well, I'll volunteer myself.
Yeah, here, come over here. Let me
second.
Let me just measure between your eyes and try to get a ratio, you know? Okay, so here's here, and we're checking here. She has about...
The tourniquet is in the tourniquet.
180 millimeters between her eyes and from between her eyebrows to the tip of her nose, it looks like about 70 millimeters.
Now, I need to tell you something, fella.
I bet you can make some gold with that information.
I have seen footage from Nazi Germany of doctors doing exactly what you just did.
Well, I appreciate your criticism, but it's
Kira's.
I'm feeling like, just judging by this ratio between Kira's eyes and her nose to brow, that she has really healthy ovum, and I'm hoping that she'll sign my model release slash explicit model release slash medical experimentation human subjects form.
I'm going to politely decline, but continue.
Well, I mean, I just feel like maybe you want to look at this. There's money involved for the donation of your eggs. Don't you find that a little weird? How can you get money to donate your eggs?
In this society, money for somebody's eggs doesn't strike me as weird.
Yeah, but they call them donor eggs.
Oh, now it's weird.
So
doorbell eggs?
I mean, if you read the fine print, it's true. Any eggs that aren't used for helping people achieve fertility will be used for medical research or art research at NADLINK. But you have to understand that this could cure Ebola.
So, or you could end up with offspring covered with ears all over the ages.
Well, is there really a difference?
Now wait a second. If theoretically, because I'm not gonna do this, but theoretically, if I were to sign this and release this, would I get to know how my genes were being used and what weird and funky things were being done with them?
Oh no, no, that's proprietary. Sorry.
So like, if there was like some girl running down the street covered in ears, I wouldn't, and I saw that.
Was your delayed twin.
Yeah, I wouldn't get to know. I wouldn't get to say, hey, that's some of my jeans running down the street covered in ears.
Yeah, this is... Yeah. It's your loss. I mean, a lot of people feel the hauntology, right? When they find out that their medical waste, even from abortion or miscarriage, is being used in medical research for human embryonic stem cells. And in some ways may have been made into cloth, like tissue-cultured monolayers of embryonic stem cells and put on the burnt face of a fireman who had nearly died in a fire. This feeling that my miscarriage is alive on the face of a fireman who was a burn victim is a little bit haunting, right? I mean, it's actually an obscure feeling that you might not know. That if you see someone with a scarred-up face, that they might be part your child.
We just have a minute and a half left on Saturday Morning Serial to the Sporty with Adam Zaretsky.
So I want to put this out before we go. On August 17th, I'm offering a DNA isolation lab for all ages in Woodstock at the Woodstock School of Art. It's Kathy Anderson's School for Young Artists. And if anyone wants to come, it's between 10 and 12. Between 10 and 12 in Woodstock at the School for Young Artists.
Is there a website that people can visit?
I think you should go to Kathy Anderson School for Young Artists online and look up the Hybrid Vegetarian DNA Isolation Lab. You should bring a fungus, a plant, or a fruit.
And you need to wear gloves when you log on to... Kathy Anderson's School for Young Artists.